Fabulous. Well, I am going to get us started. One more file of the old nail here. Okay, there we go. Welcome to Book Talk Etc., a podcast bound to grow your TBR. I'm Tina.
And I'm Renee.
And this is a conversational podcast about books and more from two Midwest mood readers who are easily distracted by new releases. And this week, we are talking about books we've been meaning to read.
If you enjoy listening, we'd love for you to follow us on Apple Podcasts or subscribe on your favorite podcast app. And if you have a minute, please consider leaving us a review or rating on Apple Podcasts or sharing us on social media. All of this truly helps other book lovers find us.
Hey, everyone. It is the start of the new month, so we are going to take the time to invite you to join us on Patreon. Patreon's an online membership platform that gives you a way to financially support our podcast. And for $5 a month, you get access to all of our bonus content. So for your $5, you'll get 2 bonus episodes and 1 recorded event, as well as invites to our BTE Discord server and Facebook group. So I will say, hopefully you listened to our last episode with our announcement, because April is going to be Renee's last month in Patreon, and we're hosting a Mood Reader happy hour. So if you want to join and, you know, give your well wishes to Renee, feel free to become a patron if you're not already. We will also release a What's in the Mailbag and have a spoiler chat about the book Leaving by Roxana Robinson, which I know a lot of people are excited about, and I'm excited too. Our monthly community read is Sociopath by Patrick Gagné, another one that I think is going to have a lot of people talking. So if this sounds like something you're interested in, please feel free to join us. Head to patreon.com/booktalk, etc., or look for the link in our show notes. Thank you for your support. Hi, Renee.
Hey, Tina. I'm excited to have April. Mm-hmm. To do all those things, especially mm-hmm. talk with you about Leaving. That is going to be such a good discussion, if I do say yes. So myself.
Yeah, right?
I think we're going to have a lot to talk about. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, good. Yeah. That's going to be fun. I'm doing good. Oh, I have so many thoughts about this topic we've done mm-hmm. today. I had a lot of fun with it, but also I have bittersweet feelings. I'll tell you why. I mean, who knew I would have such bittersweet feelings on a topic that we've done, but I do, and I'm going to expand on that later. What's new? Do you have anything new with you?
Well, you can see behind me, my shelves are a full-on mess.
I didn't even notice, but mm-hmm. I see now.
Mm-hmm, because I have 2 bookshelf areas upstairs. I've put all of my read books upstairs, so downstairs will be all of my unread. Upstairs, because I look at it more, has been organized. It's ready to go. And downstairs is a bunch of piles. But it's cool. It's exciting. And it actually relates to this topic well, because as I was unpacking and organizing stuff, I'm looking, I'm like, I want to read that. I'm trying to decide, like, if I'm going to donate, sell, or keep the books that I have unread. So it was fun to try and, you know, kind of really touch everything I own and make that decision. I'm probably keeping a lot, but, you know, there's plenty to go around. I'm definitely going to make some little free library stops. And somebody pointed this out, that it's going to be so satisfying when I do read a book that I own to move it from downstairs to upstairs.
Mm, true.
Won't that be exciting? Mm-hmm. What a thrill. I mean, us book nerds will understand, but I was like, oh, I can't wait for that. And it might inspire me to read more books that I own, because I want to bump them upstairs.
Absolutely. Okay. I don't want to forget to ask you this question, but we can expand on this in book talk.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm wondering, will you consider all of your unread books you've been meaning to read?
No.
Or, okay, mm-hmm. okay. So you're going to make, so there's a distinction. And that's what I think too, but I'm just wondering how you approach the entire unread shelves.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. And we can expand on that, because I'll think further about it. Because then I'm like, why do I have it if I'm not going to read it? Right? Like, that makes no sense.
Yeah, if they're not all books you're meaning to read. Mm-hmm. Exactly. But let's mm-hmm. Let's table that till discussion.
Table that for later. So for now, I'm going to share my loving lately. And don't throw tomatoes at me. I told you I've been on a skincare journey. So it's more skincare. But listen, it's cheap. It's inexpensive. I was looking for a good eye cream, and I found one. It is Good Molecules Yerba Mate Wake Up Eye Gel.
Oh,
we'll link to this. Of course, you know, these names have to be 18 words long. but it's by the brand Yerba Mate. And when I'm looking for an eye cream, I like something that's thick enough, but I like it to be, I like the gel kind, like where it's like opaque sort of, and it's not like white. It's like more, anyway, okay. I like a certain texture to it. This one has hyaluronic acid and caffeine, so that hydrates, minimizes puffiness and swelling, and it's $6 on Amazon. So, I mean, who among us isn't wow. interested in a $6 yeah. eye cream? I'm a big, big fan, and it's great because I'm like, perfect. I could use it as much as I want and not worry about, oh my gosh, this is like a $40 eye cream I'm going to have to re-up. I also have been using this with my Forever eye mask, and I feel a little questionable recommending this because I think it's the brand Dux, but on Amazon, it's just under generic, so I don't know if it's the same thing. I will tell you, I ordered the real McCoy for my friend for Christmas, and I got myself the dupe on Amazon, and they look the same. So anyway, it's I'll link that as well, but what it is, it's a green little eye mask, but it's reusable.
Oh,
so you can reuse it as many times as you want. So I put my little eye gel on, throw my eye mask over it, and like just wear it while I'm walking around in the morning. And it makes the product sink in more, you know, it just absorbs better.
Okay.
Mm-hmm, stays hydrated longer. I'm a fan. So those are my recommendations. If anybody is an eye cream person looking for a new one, or maybe want to start their eye cream journey, that is the Good Molecules Yerba Mate Wake Up Eye Gel. And I'd like to correct myself. The brand is Good Molecules, not Yerba Mate. Pardon me.
Oh, okay.
The brand is Good Molecules. You'll find it. We will link it.
Okay. I'm curious. Okay. This is new to me. This mm-hmm. eye mask. Mm-hmm. That is different. What I'm hearing you say, that's different than what I use that I keep in my fridge mm-hmm. that I put on from Patchology, which I've brought to the Loving Lately's before, which is their, like the 20-minute under eye. Well, I don't know patches? What you call it. Eye patch, yeah.
Are those reusable?
No, they're not reusable. Yes. And you're not supposed to have any, your eye has to be, is supposed to be clean. You don't put eye stuff on before you put that on. So I'm curious about the eye mask works differently.
Yes.
It works differently. With your eye cream. That sounds, I'm intrigued.
Yes. So it's like you just reuse it though.
But okay.
Yes, you're supposed to put your eye cream on first. And I actually looked at the real deal, the brand Dew, and it is almost, it's like $4 more. So like buy either one, it's the same thing. But yes, use an existing eye cream or serum, let it get tacky and apply your little mask on top, wear it for 10 to 20 minutes, reveal, and you're good to go. And then you put makeup on over it if you want.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm intrigued by this. I'm all about the eye things, especially for puffy and dark circles for mm-hmm. those of us who don't get great sleep.
Yeah.
Which you might be in that category still if either of the girls are up.
No, we sleep. The whole family loves to sleep, but I still have, you know, those issues. So
yeah. Okay. All right. Well, as you are in a skincare kick, I seem to be in a TV kick, and I blame my husband. He finds these shows. I'm into it though. We have been really enjoying some really great TV shows lately. And for this round, he has found us Palm Royale on Apple TV Plus. I feel like so many people would like this. Okay. It is set in 1969, and it is about an ambitious woman who aspires to cross the line between the haves and have-nots to secure her seat at America's most exclusive, fashionable, and treacherous table, Palm Beach High Society.
Oh, nice.
Oh, this is so good. It stars Kristen Wiig as that ambitious woman. Oh, she's fantastic. And there are so many stars in the show, including Carol Burnett, Josh Lucas, Ricky Martin, Laura Dern, and more. And it's also based on the book, which I have not read, but now I want to. And the book is called Mr. and Mrs. American Pie by Julie McDaniel. And typically, I prefer to read the book before I watch a series, but we started watching this, and then, you know me, and all other book nerds will appreciate this. I think the credits or something in the beginning was rolling by, and it said, based on the book by, and I was like, oh, what?
Yeah.
There's a book? I need it. So we are currently three episodes in to this. We watch, these are pretty long. They're close to or an hour. So we've been watching one episode a night. This is great. I think, Tina, I think you would probably like it. It feels like a fictionalized lower drama version of The Real Housewives.
Oh, fabulous.
That's what it feels like. Mm-hmm. It's really, really good. So that's Palm Royale on Apple TV Plus.
Wow. All right. Good. A little bit under the radar. I mean, maybe it's not. It sounds like they have some big actors, but I've never heard of it.
Yeah. It just dropped March 24th.
Oh, hot off
I mean,
the press.
Darren is on top of, he will browse through streaming things so quickly, looking for new shows to watch.
Well, good. He's our in, because Lord knows I don't watch anything unless it's reality TV.
I wouldn't find it either, truly.
Not great. Okay. Well, let me tell you about my latest read. And this is our March community read. It is The Women by Kristen Hanna. And I'm sure you've seen this floating around, but mm-hmm. it is a coming-of-age story about a dangerous time and an epic tale of a nation divided. So the hook is, women can be heroes, and 20-year-old nursing student Frances Frankie McGrath hears these words, and it's a revelation to her. She was born and bred in this high society in Southern California. Her parents are kind of conservative, and she's always been prided on doing the right thing. She understands her career to be secondary to finding a husband, according to her parents. But then someone basically says, like, why are you not on your family's hero wall? And it occurs to her, wait a minute, it's Vietnam. Because it's 1965 and women can enroll as nurses. So she decides to. On a whim, really, one day she joins the Army Nurse Corps and follows the path of her older brother, who has been shipped off to war. And you jump right in. I mean, the setup is like maybe, I don't know, 5-10% of the book, if that. And then all of a sudden, boom, you're in Vietnam. She meets her roommates. And Frankie is as green as they come. She becomes very overwhelmed by, I mean, naturally, any of us would be, but mm-hmm. it's very high stakes, kind of right in the beginning. Every day is a gamble of life and death, of hope and betrayal. Friendships run deep and can be shattered in an instant. And in war, she meets and becomes one of the lucky, the brave, the broken, and the lost. So what I didn't know about this book is that it's as much about her time after the war as it is about her time in the war. I thought it was going to be all Vietnam the whole okay. time, but she gets out, and that's not a spoiler, it's right here, but you follow her then, what happens, right? Mm-hmm. After, you know, you return to civilian life. So it really is a story about women in the military, specifically during this time period, because she's told time and time again after she comes back, women weren't at Vietnam. What are you talking about? They weren't there. She's like, yes, I was. I was there. And she's very, it's about what happened when these soldiers came back from Vietnam and the reception they got from the American people and just that time period. And I can say, I don't know that I've read very many books set during this time period that were so evocative and just so specific. I felt like I was in that time period. I've also heard a lot about some of the events, the assassinations, you know, the Kennedys, this and that, the protest. I didn't know what order they came in because it's all mm-hmm. abstract, right? When you're reading it in a history book, however many years ago. I mean, this really brought that stuff to life. I really loved it. I will say, again, it's different than I expected. It's a war story. So it's Kristen Hanna. So, you know, it's going to be emotional. It's going to pull at your heartstrings in pages. But I really enjoyed it. If you like stories with strong female characters, it did give me a little bit of In Memoriam by Alice Wynn, and I loved that last year, though that one was about male soldiers and a different war. It sort of had you on the battlefield, or in this case, in the hospitals. I mean, it really made me reflect a lot about war and even current events, and I listened to this, by the way. It's like maybe 16 hours on audio. I did this over the course of a weekend. I mean, I was immersed in this story, up late, organizing bookshelves, listening to it. Highly recommended. Of course, I recommend the audio. It's narrated by Julia Whalen. You can't go wrong. Mm-hmm. But overall, this is a highly recommended book from me. It's The Women by Kristen Hanna.
Okay. Yes, I am. Yeah, I'm reading this. I got to I'm reading this today. I'm starting it today for our community read. I'm very interested in this. And I also, despite the fact that my dad fought in Vietnam, I don't know that much about Vietnam. But yeah, I mean.
Oh, you'll like it, I think.
He still reads a lot of books detailing Vietnam. And I do know that the reception that soldiers like him got, you know, was not great. So I'm very, I'm really, really interested in diving into this one. So good review.
You will fly through it because it's very binge worthy, even though it's heavier and kind of obviously sad, but it's really good, really well done. I got to read more Kristen Hannah. I think I've read three of her books. Someone tell me, are her older books as good, if you will, as her newer stuff? Because I've loved the three that I've read.
Okay. I mean, I say yes as someone. I haven't, I'm someone, but I haven't read all of them. I've read, so if you said to me right now, what's your favorite Kristen Hannah? Okay. I would right away say The Nightingale, which I was hesitant to read that for years.
Okay.
The Nightingale.
I forgot that was her. I have to say, I know that sounds wild because I liked it. I liked it a lot, but I had high expectations going in. My favorite for her is The Great Alone. I mean, that one really.
Okay. I liked that one, but I liked it. I didn't love The Great Alone. Mm-hmm. Love The Nightingale. Mm-hmm. You know what one I really, really loved? Not as much as The Nightingale, but Night Road, which is one of her.
And
no one ever really talks about that, Kristen Hannah.
Maybe I can read that from my unread so that I can go upstairs. Okay. Thank you.
And that's also a really great what would you do book. Because it involves a mother and her children, and so it's
love those.
It's a really, you would totally be like, what would I do? All right, those are some extra recommendations. My latest read is a backlist. You know, I'm still into it, although I'm floating around in the new releases quite a bit. All of my books today are very backlist. So this one is My Sunshine Away by M.O. Walsh. And this has one of the best opening sentences, which is, it was the summer everything changed. I mean, seriously, why is that so good? Mm-hmm. I love it. Okay. The story unfolds in a Baton Rouge neighborhood, best known for cookouts on sweltering summer afternoons, cauldrons of spicy crawfish, and passionate football fandom. But in the summer of 1989, when 15-year-old Lindy Simpson, free-spirited track star and belle of the block, experiences a horrible crime late one evening near her home, it becomes apparent that this idyllic stretch of southern suburbia has a dark side too. And that's it. That is one of the best blurbs because it evokes such an accurate portrait of the story without giving a single thing away. And that's the best type of blurb. All right. This is very much a literary coming-of-age mystery, and I really enjoyed it. I loved it. So I have five big reasons I want to highlight why this was a 4.5-star winner for me. All right. First of all, the mystery. Okay, there are four suspects in the crime against Lindy Simpson, and I love that the narrator was one of them. The author did a masterful job of making me feel like I knew this narrator. I trusted him. I felt for his awkward teenage dilemmas and his unrequited love for Lindy, though at the same time, I still had whispers of doubts about his innocence. And of course, okay, number two, the 1989 time period. Of course, I love that. I was a high school teenager in 1989. And this author literally took me back to that time, talking to friends on a phone with a cord while hoping no one else picked up on the second home phone, watching the Challenger explosion at school, which we did in social studies, banana seat bikes, no helmet bike riding. I mean, all of that is in this story. Something else I loved, cliffhanger chapters. Ooh. When those are done well, like they were in the story. Oh, it was so good. Brilliant use of cliffhanger chapters. And then, like I've mentioned, the unnamed narrator who is telling the story from a point of view many years in the future. And that is a technique that I really love. I found that it enabled him to provide the hindsight of an adult while still telling the story from a teenager's perspective. And last, the writing was excellent, not in a talk over your head, wordy, literary prose type of way, but in a how did he put together such wonderful sentence that so perfectly evokes just the right feeling type of way? That is my type of literary writing. So to end, if you're wondering why I didn't rate this 5 stars, I had one minor issue with what I would describe as an odd veering off from the main plot, with an entire chapter devoted to the difference between Baton Rouge and New Orleans. It threw the pace off for me, and I found myself skimming to get back to the main storyline. It's a minor issue, but that's the only reason that I rated this 4.5 versus 5 star. So if you like an emotional coming-of-age story wrapped up in a mystery, I think you would like this. It is My Sunshine Away by M.O. Walsh.
Fabulous review. You gave me so many like ideas or so many types of books that I like. I love a book. What is this called? Where the narrator is telling you about something that happened to them in the past. I know it has a name. And I don't know what that is.
I know. I don't know what that actual name is of that literature.
You're right. They have perspective. I'm sure our English teacher friends are
they're probably yelling into the ether right now. Yes.
I'm sure we'll find out after this episode airs. You also mentioned that he might be a suspect, and I really enjoyed that. Like, that's a good angle. Mm-hmm. So, also, I will say, I didn't grow up in the 80s. I mean, I did, sort of. But, like, I too had the phone with the cord.
With the cord.
And had the three-way calling. And, like, you'd fall asleep on the phone. Like, I was of a very strange era where we had that. But then we also had pagers and cell phones, like, all in the same span of however many years.
Right.
So, anyway. But that sounds like a really good story. I'm sure a lot of readers will pick that up now.
Yeah, it was good.
All right. So, today for Book Talk, we thought it would be fun to, of course, pick books and finally get to books that we have been meaning to read. But Renee, I understand you have some questions for me about, I guess, my process or unread books in general.
Yes, I do. This topic I was so excited about. And so one of my questions for you is, number one, how did you tackle this? Did you know right away what books you were going to finally read? Because I have a short list, and I chose 2 of those books. And so I want to know from you, how did you feel about pulling those books finally off your shelves? Mm-hmm. Like, did you have strong feelings? I'll tell you mine, like, as far as what made those books so special that they landed on your books we've been meaning to read. And what, if any, expectations did that create for you? And did your reading experience, I don't know, overall disappoint you? Or do you know what I mean? Like, where did you end up landing without telling us exactly yet about the books?
Okay, I can do that. So I have 2, and one of them was a physical book that I own. I've had it for a while. I think it came out on paperback fairly recently because I know I got it. It was like on a list of books I could request to have sent to me. I was like, oh my God, I've been meaning to read this one forever. Yes, let me have it. And so I haven't owned it for that long, but I know it's been on my list for a really long time. And one thing I do wish I knew, I wish there was an easy way on Goodreads to, like, and I'm sure people have come up with their own ways, but I wish there was a way for us to, like, easily say, okay, this is where I heard about it from. Because I have no idea where on earth I first heard about one of my books, the one that I owned. But I don't know what made me grab it. I think I was in the mood. It is a book in translation. I know it's short. And I was like, you know what? The cover had gotten me. I was like, let me just pick this one up. Let me just put it on my, I had it over on my meaning to read shelf, like my sort of, I have my unread shelf, but then I have a little group of books that I'm like, all right, get to these sooner rather than later. I went to that shelf and this was on there and I thought, ooh, let me see. And then I was able to get it from the library quickly, sampled it, and I liked the narrator's voice. And I was like, all right, this is good. This is my first one. My second one is a newer release. It came out in November of 2023. I brought it, I think, to somewhere, maybe a shelf edition or a book on the radar. I had heard about it, and it ties into things that I'm interested in personally. Like, I should say professionally. It's psychology. It's a psychology book. And I was like, oh my gosh, I want to read this so hard. I put a hold on it right away. And it finally, it just came in as I was looking for my second book to read. I mean, that's like 4 months later for a book that has not that many reviews. So I was like, all right, I have been meaning to read this ever since it came out. And since I knew the wait time was like super long, I'm like, all right, let me just go ahead and prioritize this. Same thing. I was driving, had the audio. I was like, let me just grab it and put it. That's what came in. The hold was an audio. And I got hooked early. To answer the second part of your question, I didn't really have any expectations going in, honestly, for either of them. I was more so looking for something that grabbed me early. And I was like, let me get it. Like, I didn't want to have to force myself to read it, or, you know, I wanted something that hooked me early. Unfortunately, both of these are not my favorites. Neither one do I highly recommend. I will say I am disappointed. I don't know that it has much to do with the expectation. Like, it's not like I've been holding on to this book for 20 years, because I have some of those that I've been holding on to forever. I just don't think either of these are my cup of tea, and I'll tell you why. So that's my process. What about you?
Mine are both books that I have been waiting. Don't ask me. And here's another thing. I don't know why I've been waiting to read them.
Right.
But I've been waiting years. So these are books that are beloved, and I knew it. And so
I cannot wait to hear what they are.
These are two books that when I see people post about them or talk about them still, both of them have been made into movie and TV series. Mm-hmm. So then they get revisited in the, you know, in the book community. And I always say, oh my gosh, I can't wait to read that. I've been meaning to read that. And then I don't know why. So here's part of what I was analyzing about myself. Why haven't I read that? And part of me thinks that I was holding on to these super popular books. There's lots of love for them. Because they were like 5-star, they were those potential 5-star on the horizons. Like if I just left those out there unread, I too, when I read them, would have 5-star read, and I would love them as much as everybody else. So let me keep those on the 5-star potential shelf.
Got
as an anticipatory. Amazing read. I don't know. That to me, I feel like that's what I was doing.
You were trying to manifest the 5+ star reading experience.
Yeah, I guess I was.
You know,
because of how popular these are and how high they, I mean, these books have super high ratings and reviews. I assumed I would be one of those people. And I mean, these were not 5-star reads for me. So I'll spoil that right now.
Yeah.
But it was so fun. And I challenged myself with both of these books. And so the reason they're a little bit bittersweet too is because now I've read them. And now they are no longer out there with that potential 5-star greatness.
Oh, man. Okay. Well, I'm obviously super curious.
That was my analytical reasoning for these types of books. And I was curious to see if you had a different process, which you kind of did. And I'm glad that we approached this from different standpoints.
I know. I sort of wish now that I would have tried to pick potential 5-star reads. I don't know. I mean, again, I'm just so scattered. I have so many lists and things. It was just more of an impulse sort of pick. I knew I had been meaning to read them for a while. Well, like, what does meaning to read mean, really? Because I looked on my Goodreads, neither one were on there as a want to read. But I don't often put stuff there anymore. I use more Storygraph for that. I was looking at my Goodreads to see what the oldest. Now, I go in and cull my meaning to read or my want to read every so often. The oldest one on here is Night by Elie Wiesel. And I don't know why, again, I've not read it. I put it on here in 2010. That would be a full, 14 years
ago?
Like, man, can you, it's like a 150-page book. Can you please read this book? The next is a couple of series, including The Dublin Murder Squad by Tana French. I only read book one. I need to delete those. I'm probably never going to read them because I'm no longer a series girl.
But you don't have to be for that. You can just pick. Mm-mm. You don't have to be for that Dublin murder series.
Mm-mm. No, I can't.
You can't?
No. Because I can't do it.
Because it's technically a series.
Yeah, I can't do it.
Okay. All right.
What about you? Do you have any books that have been lingering in your ether for years and years?
Well, you know what? I pulled up my Goodreads and it turns out I've read I reversed the order on my want to reads and I've actually read a couple of these, didn't take them off. So one that I see, and I know I own this book, and let's see how long it's been lingering. Okay, not too bad. I marked it. Okay, so I've been wanting to read this since 2016, and it's called The Rosary Girls by Richard Montaneri. And I do want to read him. Yeah, so 2016's not bad. I feel like my to read is not, I probably like really went hard on my to read shelf in 2016 when I started blogging. And that's kind of where this starts, because before then I don't seem to have much on here. So yeah, probably 2016. But both of these books I'm talking about today were published way before 2016. So
okay. All right.
All right.
Well, let's share. It sounds like, okay, well, let me just tell you about it. Okay. My first book was The Vegetarian by Han Kang. And this one was the winner of the 2016 Man Booker International Prize. I should have gone ahead and just stopped myself before I got started because those never work for me. I don't know what my problem is. I keep trying to read Booker Prize winners or International Prize winners, and I just don't always jive with them. So this book is about a woman who has a nightmare about meat. And what happens when a dream about meat causes a woman to no longer conform to societal pressures? Yong Hee and her husband live an ordinary life, but when splintering, blood-soaked images start haunting her thoughts, she decides to purge her mind and renounce eating meat. In a country where societal mores are strictly obeyed, her decision to embrace a more plant-like existence is shocking. This is a shocking act of subversion, and her husband's shocked, her family's shocked. I'm not sure why, but this is like a big decision. And as her passive rebellion manifests in ever more extreme and frightening forms, scandal, abuse, and estrangement begin to send Yong Hee spiraling deep into the spaces of her fantasy. In a complete metamorphosis of both mind and body, her now dangerous endeavor will take her impossibly far from her once known self altogether. So really, this is a story about a woman's slow descent into madness. And what I liked about it, it's told in three parts. The first part is the husband's point of view. And that was the one that got me because you know he's a questionable sort and you're kind of like, you just know I was on the woman's side in this case, right? So I'm watching him and I think the opening line is something like, my wife is a very ordinary woman and that's what I liked about her. And so when she no longer is ordinary and starts to resist eating meat, like she refuses to, and she doesn't really explain herself. She just says, I no longer eat meat. I had a dream. He starts kind of spiraling and gets her family involved. There is a dinner scene, sort of the apex of the action in this story, if you will, of that section, especially. Her family is basically trying to force feed herself and something happens.
Oh.
It's really, really bizarre. It's very bizarre is how I will categorize this, and not necessarily in a bad way, because I will say I finished it. I was curious. After the husband section in part one, you get a new point of view in part two, and that is that of her brother-in-law. It's kind of where it lost me. He is an artist. And there's a lot of talk about art. I don't know why I keep running into art books, but I was like, the painting and the this and the that. My mind started to wander. And then the ending was solid. It was the sister, so the woman's sister. And so it really is sort of, I don't even know. I feel like I'm doing a bad job describing this, but it's one of those books where it's very hard to describe. It is set in Korea, in case you were wondering, and it's translated from Korean. It is a book that will have you questioning, you know, there's not much that happens, but I liked to watch and see. I was curious to know what was going to happen to the woman. I felt bad for her, right? Because I was like, okay, is this mental illness? Like, what's going on here? I mean, you sort of see, you know, how she ends. It also got very sexual in the second part. And that's where it lost me. I was like, oh God, I don't like this imagery. Like, I'm okay. I didn't need this. Mm-hmm. I will say, I do wish that I would have liked to hear from the woman's point of view, the actual woman who's having these dreams. You get very brief snippets. It was an interesting choice. And I guess I didn't mind that, but I would have been curious to know from her. Overall, I can't say I recommend this. I am happy to have gotten it off my list. I think if you like weird books, if you like books that are unsettling, sort of vivid imagery, this could work for you, specifically too, if you like books in translation or award winners. I just know that that is not generally my cup of tea. This was The Vegetarian by Han Kang.
Okay. All right. Interesting. Wow.
It's got a lot of reviews. It's got 164,000 ratings. So it's a popular book. Mm-hmm. I just am not the target audience. It first came out in 2007.
Okay. All right. Well, book one, here we go, is Atonement by Ian McEwan.
Okay.
I have wanted to read this forever. Oh my gosh.
Yes,
okay.
You have.
It is set.
I know that.
It is set on a hot summer day in 1935. 13-year-old Bryony Tallis witnesses a moment's flirtation between her older sister, Cecilia, and Robbie Turner, the son of a servant and Cecilia's childhood friend. But Bryony's incomplete grasp of adult motives, together with her precocious literary gifts, brings about a crime that will change all their lives. And the story follows that crime's repercussions through the chaos and death of World War II and into the close of the 20th century. All right. Have you read this one, Tina?
No.
Mm-mm. Okay. I knew this was beloved. Like I said, I knew it was about a potential wrongful conviction and a love story. So really, I had no memory of what else this was really about other than what it says right here and that it's really beloved. This is very literary and I've been into literary. I think one reason why I hadn't read this before is because I used to really shy away from literary books. And then in the past year and a half, I'm embracing literary fiction to a degree I never used to. So, okay, I thought, all right, now's the time. What I will say, the audio was excellent. I think the audio saved a lot of this for me. I thought the narrator did an amazing job with voices. A lot happens in this book. On the one hand, I appreciated, but on the other hand, that's one of my criticisms. There were many parts to this story that I really liked. The way it's set up is a prolonged introduction to Bryony and what's going on. We get quite a bit of information about what it is about those literary goals that, you know, she's a writer. She's 13, which at times she definitely read younger, but she is 13. And there's quite a bit of an introduction that expands to include a lot of characters. And for that reason, I don't know that full audio is the best way to do this. I did end up alternating with my e-book. And I do think that that's the way to go, or just do all ebook, even though the narrator was excellent. But there's a lot to keep track of. And what I love that we got to hear from Bryony from a point of view in the future. Again, perhaps I should have looked up what that is called. But
you know what we're talking. You know what
we mean. You know, so many of you know what I'm talking about, that technique. We get to hear from her, but that's not how the whole story is told. Okay. But that is part of the story, and I absolutely loved when that part came. The story itself felt very limited to me with respect to aspects like the introduction of characters really quickly without telling us, or me, I guess, I felt too much about these characters. And then, you know, we're on to something else. I personally wanted more. I wanted more of that, of the characterization of certain characters. But what I felt like I got more of was a level of details and descriptions and introspections. And that was really so much so that there was definite boredom on my part. And I was aware of the fact that I was so bored. And also combine that with the, he has a very particular writing style. And so my analytical side of my my reading head was like, I understand that this is really great writing, but also I don't think it's for me. And I was aware of that. So I wanted, and because I was aware of that, I paid much more attention to the writing style and how I was feeling about it and all of that than I normally would. And also because I wasn't that engaged with the story and I wanted to be more engaged with the story. Okay. So for me, when the story truly captured my intention, it was like a light bulb. And I was like, okay, this sentence is amazing. Now I'm in it. I looked at my phone because I was out walking. I was at 39%. Mm-hmm. That's a long time to wait. But even after that, it dipped back into I'm bored. I'm back to being bored. Okay, but I re-engaged again with the last part of the story. Now, I believe that was part three. It's very much towards the end of the story. I re-engaged, and that part really saved the reading experience for me. It was brilliant. I mean, it was brilliant. And I can see why this book is so beloved. My feelings were so complicated about this book, I decided to use the Callpile review system. Ooh. Have you ever used this, Tina?
Yes. Oh my gosh, you just reminded me. Yes.
I've never used this. I'll quickly just say, if you're not familiar with this type of review system, it's a rating system. It looks at seven key tenets that a reader can use to generate a specific targeted review in a consistent way. So it's looking for character, atmosphere, writing style, plot, intrigue, logic, relationships, enjoyment. And because I'm telling you, I was just so conflicted that I wanted to really dig deep on my review for this, because as soon as I finished, I immediately said, okay, that was 3 stars at most, 3 stars for me. And then I decided to use the Callpile system. And I went ahead and did my rating. I'll link to this, by the way, so that you can read exactly how to do this. But my rating ended up coming out at a 4.71, mm-hmm. which falls at almost the lowest end of the 3-star system, the 3-star rating. Oh my God. So that tracks. I was like, that tracks. What I rated the lowest for me in this story was characters, writing style, plot, and enjoyment. So I feel overall, I'm so glad I read it, but yeah, I'm a bit disappointed that it's not out there for me about as a 5-star read anymore, but I'm so glad I read it. It's Atonement by Ian McEwan.
Wow. Well, you've really took us through your thought process, and I can appreciate that. I like the Callpile system because it helps you really identify and differentiate, other than like, I don't know. I probably should have done that with the vegetarian, because I'm like, I have no idea what I thought. I don't think it's going to get a very high star rating from me, I'm sad to say, but it's okay. And I think that system specifically for me, it's specific enough. It's personal enough. So mm-hmm. like, I don't feel as like, because sometimes, especially if it's a book that's loved or won mm-hmm. a lot of awards, I probably would give vegetarian a 2-star, but I'm like, but I won this award. Maybe you're just a dum-dum, so maybe it's a 3-star book. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, right. I know that it's probably well done. It just wasn't, I wasn't the target reader. Mm-hmm. Whereas I feel like that rating system's more personal. And it somehow gives me permission to be like, no, it's okay. What did you think? How would you rate it?
I think so. For me, it allowed me to rate a little bit more, I guess, outside of my feelings, because mm-hmm. I'm a feeling rater mm-hmm. too. And really include a bit more about, okay, really, truly, what did I think about the writing style and mm-hmm. the setting and all of that. Now, I didn't rate those super low because I think Ian McEwan did an excellent job on a lot of that. I just overall also think it just wasn't for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Fair enough. All right. Well, now we know.
Now I know.
All right. Well, let me tell you about my next book. Okay. So you know that I and Renee and I mm-hmm. typically don't look at Goodreads ratings before right. picking one up, deciding mm-hmm. what we think. Had I done that for this one, I would have seen that it has a 2.81 average rating Goodreads, which is one of the lowest I've ever seen. I mean, for a book that's got 408 ratings. So not a ton, but still. Mm-hmm. This book is Data Baby, My Life in a Psychological Experiment by Susanna Breslin. And I was so pumped to read this. I teach psychology, and we talk a lot about these experiments that took place using human subjects. You know, it's sort of at the beginning of psychological research, the problems with it, the flaws in the research. Could we replicate that today? And so the premise of this, I was like hooked. I'm like, oh my gosh, maybe I can talk about it in class. Like, this sounds so interesting. Because the opening is, what if your parents turned you into a human lab rat on the day you were born? Would that change the story of your life? Would that change who you are? So this is a memoir. And Susanna Breslin is a toddler, and her parents enroll her in an exclusive laboratory preschool at the University of California, Berkeley, where she becomes one of 128 children who are research subjects in an unprecedented 30-year psychological experiment. It's a longitudinal study, and it follows these children all the way from, I think, 4 is when she starts, through 30. And I'm like, oh my God,
how cool is that? Yeah.
And it's basically, their goal is to try and predict who she and her cohort will grow up to be. Right? We're in
okay,
it. Come
that's
on, tell me more. And then it goes into, don't tag her. Please don't tag her. I understand. Okay, I'll just keep going. It flashes forward. We hear about that study. I should say that study was maybe 15 to 20% of the book. The rest of it is her life story, which is fine. She talks about her time in an abusive marriage to a man with violent history. She talks about her battle with breast cancer. She talks about her family and how she became estranged from her parents. She moved around a lot. And like, you know, she talks about her job in journalism and how she came to, you know, kind of understand her time as this human subject. And I think a part of it was interesting. I really liked the explanation of the psychology, the goals of the study, how she found out that she was being watched. And so the beginning is what hooked me. Like I said earlier, I was like, oh my God, this is really cool. Like, what would you do? Her parents were professors, and basically they signed her up to be a live subject in exchange for free childcare and to contribute to a body of research. I thought, hell, the cost of childcare these days, I might put my girls in it. So, the kids, the whole thing, though, is the kids can't know they're being observed because of observer bias. And she talks about, she somehow heard somebody cough between the glass window and figured out, she's like, wait, somebody's behind that mirror. And that really messed with her. I used to have this thing when I was a little kid. I'm an only child. So I would always pretend. I remember we used to have our washer dryer in the bathroom, and I would always look at it and I thought, someone's back there. Someone is watching me, which is so freaking creepy. I was a creepy little kid, but I used to think people were watching me. So I thought, oh my God, what if that were true? What if people really were watching you? So again, I was kind of hooked. One thing this book taught me was that, boy, it made me want to be a better mother. She and her mother had a very fraught relationship to the point where her mom would say often, I don't want to be a mother anymore. Like,
oh,
that is horrifying to know that. It made me dread raising teen girls a little bit because I'm like, oh boy. All of that was good. Where it lost me was sort of in her adult years, because she becomes very unmoored and is just trying to find herself for a lot of her life. And it's a bit of a train wreck in terms of her life. And that's okay. If you like memoirs with flawed people and like almost ordinary in some ways, like I see why she did what she did in terms of like feeling lost. She works a lot in, she's worked as a journalist and wrote a lot about sex for like Playboy and like porn mags and things like that. You know me, I'm like, okay, I don't need that. Like, keep the door shut. I don't want to know about that. I think the people who rated this quite low, their biggest issue is that they understandably thought they were going to get a lot more details about the study, whereas the study is sort of a footnote. It's very secondary. You do get information about it at the very end, but as is the case sometimes with some longitudinal studies, the data is unclear. They don't know, right? They have inclination, they have thoughts, but they can't replicate the study. And obviously the subjects were biased. They were all growing up in Berkeley and their parents were professors. So like, that's not a random sampling.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So it was interesting. I really, for me personally, it took me back to being a really young kid. I remember they gave us intelligence tests when I was in kindergarten. And I remember like taking the test and like wanting to do well and like wanting to be praised. So like some of that was kind of interesting to think about that. she actually uncovers the boxes with like some of their, the researchers' notes and data. I was like reading, she figured out what her number was in the study and was trying to like see what she answered. So that part I thought was really interesting. She's almost this crude storyteller though, which is not my cup of tea. She also talks about her breast cancer and calls it her tumor baby and refers to this throughout the story, which gave me that face you just made, the eyebrow raise, that kind of gave me pause. Process breast cancer in whatever way you need to. My mom's going through it right now. And so it was very jarring for me to be in this story and then just be like, oh God, yes, that's right. And like, it took me in a weird spot. So just know that I think if you're going to read this, she talks about breast cancer quite a bit and tumors and things like that. At the end of the day, the publisher wanted this to be something different. They wanted a memoir. She didn't want to write a memoir. And so you can tell the parts that she was excited about were more of the study and the psychology and that research and journalistic aspect of it. But I think the publisher wanted more memoir. Because of that, the memoir part wasn't that well done because I don't think she wanted to write that. Overall, I'm very middle of the road on this. I'm not mad I read it, but by the end, I was happy to be out of that story or that life, if you will. The comps, too, for me, not good. Lab Girl meets Brain on Fire. No, I don't think so.
Okay.
That is a stretch. So this book is Data Baby, My Life in a Psychological Experiment by Susanna Breslin.
Okay. Good now, review.
Did I say the title at all in the beginning? I don't know. Unclear.
Yeah, you did. You said Data Baby. Yeah.
I think I didn't say the full thing. Anyway, yeah. I'm glad I read it because I was curious and I love, you know, obviously love the research aspect of it. And it was fascinating to think about what would happen if you were a kid that was a subject. And it sounds like, you know, she probably would have gone through these things anyway because of her family and like things she experienced, not because she was in this research study.
Right. Oh, okay. Well, your review is really good. And Thanks. You're probably right about what she wanted to write versus what the publisher wanted her to write, maybe. Yeah.
You can almost see the seams, right? Like, oh, I'm like, okay. Yeah. Like, I get. Yeah. Anyway, that's my take.
All right. And
tell me about your other book that people love.
Well, if I say this, will you guess what it is?
Let's try.
Because you know I don't often read dystopian.
Okay. 1984?
Super popular dystopian.
Station 11?
Yes.
Really?
You've Station never read 11. That before? I have never read Station 11, and I read it. Okay, so have you read Station 11
yes.
by Emily St. John Mandel?
Yes.
Okay, good. Then we can compare thoughts then a little bit. All right. So Station 11, if there's anyone else who has not read it yet, like me, it is about main character Kirsten and the fact that she will never forget the night Arthur Leander, the famous Hollywood actor, had a heart attack on stage during a production of King Lear. That was the night when a devastating flu pandemic arrived in the city, and within weeks, civilization as we know it came to an end. And 20 years later, Kirsten moves between the settlements of the altered world with a small troupe of actors and musicians. They call themselves the Traveling Symphony, and they have dedicated themselves to keeping the remnants of art and humanity alive. But when they arrive in St. Deborah by the Water, they encounter a violent prophet who will threaten the tiny band's existence. And as the story takes off, moving back and forth in time and vividly depicting life before and after the pandemic, the strange twist of fate that connects them all will be revealed. I know I said before that this was not a 5-star read, but I ended up loving this story. I ended up loving it. It took me a long time to get there, but I ended up loving it. So this is a very interesting story. And also, I had the expectations of the fact that everyone else seemed to love the story, along with the fact that I read The Singer's Gun, which was my first Emily St. John Mandel book last year. And I love that. That was one of my top 10 books of the year. So I had those expectations of like, oh my God, I'm reading another book by her. It's going to be amazing. And it started off really, really strongly for me. I was really pulled in to the beginning, which I'm really glad I was. The structure of this book is one of the most unique structures to a story. So you get the beginning, which takes place, you know, days before this flu pandemic, which is called the Georgian flu, before it arrives in the city. Then you are going to go forward in time, and then you are going to go back in time to before the pandemic. And you are also going to switch between characters. If it sounds like a lot, it is. Mm-hmm. You have to pay attention. I did most of this on audio, and it was a struggle, I will say, just to keep track of everything. And so I would, yeah, I don't know if I had the e-copy, but anyway, I ended up flipping back and forth. So like I said, there are many characters. It takes patience to allow the author to introduce you to these various characters and their stories. They weren't boring, but there were some that were more interesting than others. For example, Jeevan in the beginning, he used to be a paparazzi journalist, and he is the one that rushed on stage during the production of King Lear to perform CPR on Arthur. And I was like, okay, I was really interested in following him. I thought he was an interesting character, as was Arthur. And then Arthur had three previous wives, and one of them, Miranda, was one of my favorite characters in the book. So you have to get to know all of these people, because the way the story shifts in time, it will feel like, or it did feel like for me, okay, wait, who's talking? Where are they in time? It takes a while to reorient yourself between sections. And it takes even more time if you're only listening on audio. So that was one thing. Really, truly, once I allowed myself to let the story be what it was, I became much more invested as it went on. But what I will say, okay, it doesn't take long for her to start to explain this Georgian flu. And if this is not Emily St. John Mandel with a crystal ball of COVID, I don't know what is. Mm-hmm. I was shocked. I feel like if I didn't know, I would have said, oh, she wrote this after COVID hit. But I mean, no, but she didn't. No, obviously, she wrote this years before. It is eerie. It is chilling. It is fascinating what she got right and what it is and what ended up happening. And then she just basically, she took it to a level of, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, by then making this a dystopian world where civilization just came to an end. And she tells us how that happened. And oh my gosh, what a way to pull the reader in, because I was riveted when she talks about how the characters are like, I didn't realize that was the last time I would ever see, you know, I would ever see a plane fly across the sky. And mm-hmm. and a lot of the people who were in other countries and then could never return. And it was really, truly brilliant. Okay. Now, it was a roller coaster though for me. And meaning I was up on highs of like, oh my gosh, I love this. I'm in the story. I'm following these characters. And then every now and then, I have to be honest, when we would go back to the traveling symphony, I was somewhat bored. But I'm not, I don't know why that was. I need to really unpack that a little bit more. But the traveling symphony parts of it up until the 60% mark were my least favorite parts. And you're not there a ton, but they were my least favorite parts. Okay, what happened at the 60th percent mark? A literal rocket ship went off. From 60% on, this is a 5-star read for me. From 60% on, it was so good. It was so good. The pace picked up for me. The way that she was able to take the threads that seemed to be not connected and connect them was genius. It was really genius. So know that the interconnectedness of these stories does happen. I was surprised, and it was fulfilling to see how she connected those threads. What I loved was also the way that she used this story to highlight things, and I quote, things that were taken for granted miracles, which are things we have right now in our everyday world. Airplanes, the ability to text or call a person across the world in a second. Hot coffee, TV, movies. These were things that people in the story talked about with so much longing and nostalgia. And we have that right now. And it makes you really stop and appreciate your life and what you have. And as much as, you know, you complain about certain things, we have that. And I want to leave you with this. These other parts of her, of the dystopian world that she created, could there be anything more scary than the post-anesthesia era?
No, that's okay. It. I'm out.
Post-anesthesia era. Era. It was chilling. Okay. I have a lot. I mean, if you've read this, I have stuff. I want to talk about it. I have so many thoughts. It's Station 11 by Emily St. John Mandel. Initially, I landed at a 4.25, mm-hmm. but I did the call pile and I am at the very high end of a four-star rating. And the more I think about it, because I just finished this 2 days ago, the more I like it and I'm feeling it's a 4.5. So I'm going to call, it at a 4.5.
Okay. Well, I'm glad we got there. You know, it's funny. I read this and I know I was not one that rated this 5-star slam dunk.
Okay.
I think I was at the lower end of like a 4, maybe 3.75, 4, specifically because I don't love the traveling musicians took mm-hmm. me out of it. And also at the time, I read it in 2016. I was a different reader. I don't think I'd ever really read anything remotely literary at that time. It was, you know, mystery thriller type thing. Also, I had finished The Stand by Stephen King in August of 2016, and I read Station 11 in October of 2016.
Okay.
The two have similarities, but what I love about The Stand, it's all about the pandemic. It's all about the buildup, the calamity, what's going on, everything shut down, what's really happening, trying to find other survivors. Whereas Station 11, you have that in the beginning, mm-hmm. and then it's 20 mm-hmm. years later. And that, I remember getting taken out of the action. I think I liked the buildup and the calamity a little bit more.
Okay.
I would read this again, though, because I'm curious what I would think as a more, I don't know if it's a more sophisticated reader, whatever, a different reader, a mm-hmm. different person now. I'd read it again to see what I think, because I do love her writing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Maybe I need to read The Stand someday and invest in that story and just, because I don't read hardly any dystopian. This felt like accessible dystopian.
Yes,
and very chillingly a realistic dystopian. Do you know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like,
oh yeah.
I mean, it felt really realistic. I like that. So she did an excellent job with the way she built this world. So that all worked just great for me. So yeah, I don't know. I'll still continue on with Emily St. John Mandel, but man, is she a different writer from like The Singer's Gun? This was completely different.
Oh, interesting, because I've never read her older stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Alrighty, well, fun. Let's wrap up with shelf editions. Mm-hmm. And yesterday I had the pleasure of meeting one of our listeners in real life, Zachary at Rye Reads on Instagram, and he's on BookTube as well. And he was in Chicago and we went to a bookstore. And so I'm bringing the book we both bought called Forgotten Sisters by Cynthia Pelayo. Just came out in March. And boy, you'll see why I wanted to grab this one. A city's haunted history and fairy tale horrors converge for two women in an addictive novel of psychological suspense by multiple Bram Stoker Award nominated author. So you've got two sisters, Anna and Jenny, who live in a historic bungalow on the Chicago River. We've been there, Renee, you and me together in a boat. So they're tethered to a disquieting past. And you remember those bungalows, like some of the houses on the edge of, like on the river?
Yeah, yeah.
I think these women, these fictional women live there.
Oh, cool. Okay.
But the home is a little bit spooky. They are tethered to a disquieting past with nowhere else to go and nothing can part them from their family home. So it's been in their family for generations. They're not going to leave. not the maddening creaks. Don't worry about the disembodied voices that rattle the old walls. And they're not going to worry about the inexplicable drownings in the area or the increasing number of bodies that float by Anna's window.
Interesting. Mm-hmm.
So to stave off loneliness, Anna has a podcast spinning ghostly tales of Chicago's tragic history. But when Anna captures the attention of an ardent male listener, she awakens to the possibilities of a world outside. As their relationship grows, so do Ginny's fears. More and more people are going missing in the river, and then two detectives are calling. They're looking for a link between the mysterious river and what's housed on the bank. Even Anna and Jenny don't understand how dreadful it is and still can be when the truth about their unsettled lives begins to surface. So, very curious. Tell me what's in the water. That book is Forgotten Sisters by Cynthia Pelayo.
Oh, good. Okay. Yeah, I've never heard of that. Mm-hmm. All right. I am going to go with a summer release. It is Tell Me Who You Really Are by Luisa Luna. It comes out June 4th. And this is about Brooklyn psychiatrist Dr. Carolyn Strange. And she is certain she knows what's best for her patients, her family, and pretty much everyone else. But that all changes when a troubled young man arrives for his appointment and makes a pair of alarming confessions. I am going to kill someone, and I know who you really are.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Dr. Carolyn is accustomed to hearing her patient's deepest, darkest secrets, but it seems this patient, Nelson, may be one step ahead when detectives show up later that day inquiring about a missing woman. It looks like Nelson has made good on his threat, yet somehow it's Dr. Carolyn who becomes the prime suspect. I mean, it sounds like true to her character, she is convinced the police are incompetent, and she decides to take matters into her own hands, chasing down the elusive Nelson and running headlong into a past she has spent her entire life trying to forget. As she closes in on her target, all the polished pieces of her manicured life splinter when people begin to question who she really is. And this publisher is billing this as unpredictable and compulsively readable. And it is a psychological thriller that begs the question, can a person ever really outrun their past? So this one is Tell Me Who You Really Are by Luisa Luna.
Ooh, sounds good.
Yeah.
Well, that's it for today. We thank you for spending a part of your day with us. Links to all the books mentioned can be found in the show notes. If you enjoyed today's episode, you can help us by following wherever you listen and by leaving a review on Apple Podcasts. It helps us get our show out to new listeners and grows our audience. And don't forget, if you would like access to exclusive bonus content and community, you can join us for $5 a month on patreon.com/booktalketc.
If you'd like to connect with us, email us at booktalketc@gmail.com. You can also find us at BookTalkEtc on Instagram, Tina at TBREtc, and me, Renee, at It's Book Talk. Talk to you next week. In the meantime, remember,
everything's better with books.
There.
Ready when you are.
There we go.
Are you bouncing?